Every year is different, and I'm not going to lie, 2024 was magical. You know, it was incredible. But like you said, we brought a lot of the same guys, but it's going to take a lot from everyone. You know, it starts with people, starts with relationships, and we need just to move on from 2024. Even though it was a very good year for us last year, we didn't accomplish what, you know, the ultimate goal, which is to win a championship. So we got to move on. Now it's up to all of us, 2025, and just taking care of the things that we need to take care, control the things that we need to control, and just move on, you know. I'm excited, like I said. This is a special group, great people, and like I said, man, I can't wait.
I mean, you always come to spring training, you know, wanting to win a World Series. If you don't come to spring training wanting to win a World Series, then, you know, you shouldn't be here. So, you know, we have high expectations every single year. You know, we did do a lot in the offseason, though, to make this team better. And, you know, the expectations are high, and, you know, we expect a lot out of ourselves.
You talked about this being New York being a Mets town. Instantly, of course, you know, the other fan base is ready to jump on that. How do you keep that pressure from building up and dealing with the hate?
Winning games. That's all you got to do. You don't have to talk too much. You just got to go out there and get the job done.
It's another edition of the Talking Mets podcast here on this Sunday, February the 16th, 2025. Of course, I'm your host, Mike Silva. You can check me out all the time at thetalkingmetspodcast.com. You get me on X at Talking Mets No G and on your favorite podcasting service, Apple, Spotify, pretty much whatever podcasting service you desire. If you want to interact with me, Mike Silva at talkingmetspodcast.com. No G, Mike Silva at TalkingMetsPodcast.com. You can get me on Instagram, TalkingMetsNoG, and I'd love for you to subscribe to the newsletter, Substack.com/@TalkingMetsNoG. And I want to thank the good folks on the Fansided Podcasting Network for supporting this show. Well, we are kicking off another baseball season here at the Talking Mets Podcast. It's officially pitchers and catchers. A full squad is starting to report. You heard from Juan Soto today. You heard some clips from Carlos Mendoza. And here at the Talking Mets podcast, we're kicking off the latest Mets season with basically a breakdown of what we're going to be looking at, positional battles, maybe some players we're going to be watching. We're setting it all up as we head into the Grapefruit League and the Grapefruit League roundups over the next 6 weeks as the team gears up to start the grind. Another season, another 162 games in what, 180 days, and we'll be here blow by blow for you. And, you know, I'll start off by saying this. You heard a little bit from Carlos Mendoza about putting 2024 back in the closet. You heard from Jeff McNeil. You heard some swag there from Juan Soto. And I think this season is maybe the most important in Mets history. And I'll tell you why. After last year, after what really happened, you know, how you went from this is a pretty team that's a little bit better than you think after a winter of the media telling you the Mets are retreating, they're not contending, and then Stearns comes in, puts this team together, they get off to that horrendous start, they show some promise, they fall back, and from Memorial Day, like we've talked about onward, it was a completely different season, a magical season. You heard Mendoza talk about that. One of the more fun seasons that I've experienced watching the Mets, covering the Mets, doing this. For some younger fans, it might be the most fun season they had in their short time watching baseball. I don't know where it stands for anybody, but he's right. It's time to put that in the closet. However, the lessons learned about how they broke through some of the anvil that's been on this organization's back for a long time, those you don't put back in the closet. I think we challenged, after the season was over, I sat here and I challenged the Mets, the front office, Steve Cohen, to go out there and leverage the vibes. Yes, they didn't win a championship. Yes, the Dodgers were superior to them in the league championship series. And the Crosstown Yankees won a pennant. But I challenge them to go out and not try to, all right, it was a nice little run. We got some nice players. Let's see where this group could go. No, let's double down. Let's leverage this. Let's turn this into something special. Let's make this the starting point of the new Mets, of the new type of way that the Mets are going to be doing business with all the things down the road in the future, with the Mets Park around Citi Field, with all the things that Cohen has planned to turn this into a destination. Can the Mets go out and actually win the offseason? But not win the offseason just to get a back page, but win it so that they can go out and they can leverage this opportunity they have, one in which they've never done in their history. We talked about post-Subway Series 2000, post-06 when they lost to the Cardinals, 2015. In the last 25 years, they've had three opportunities, two or three, depending on how you look at it, to really go out and take a good vibe season and use it as a catapult, and the prior ownership wasn't able to do it because, quite honestly, they didn't have the finances, the gumption, the vision to do it. Well, clearly this group with Cohen and Stearns does. They won the Soto sweepstakes. They went out there and they used some of the information they have on hand, whether it be their confidence in Hefner, the pitching lab, the analytics department, to make some crafty moves up and down the roster. And then they put the cherry on top in the offseason with the laborious, sometimes never-ending negotiations with Pete Alonso to get a contract that allows them to see if what Pete has left after a couple of not-so-great years, maybe capitalize that and make a decision whether they want to partner with him on a longer-term basis in the future. You could not have asked for a better way for that Pete Alonso negotiations to end in the Mets' favor. So after all that, they report to spring training. They've done the first step here of leveraging 2024. They went out and they invested in the roster. And I don't think they just threw money like maybe they've done in the past in their history. I think they threw money at the right players. I think there was opportunities or temptations to throw money at other players. Or when the Alonso negotiations were going bad, maybe just run out and throw A money at a B minus player. They didn't do that. They didn't do any of that. They sat back and they were, you know, almost holding the cards. And maybe they didn't always have the deck they wanted, but they wound up getting the hand at the end they wanted and winning the hand, if you ask me. So now comes the work. The magic happens in the work. The magic doesn't happen in the hot stove. Despite what the media will tell you, there's no banners in the hot stove. Yeah, the Dodgers are going to get their media pennant. It used to be the Yankees got the media pennant. Now the Dodgers get the media pennants. It's funny how that works, how it all changes and how it all, you know, the worm turns or moves 3,000 miles west, so to speak. So now it's about the work. And I think the things that you're hearing from the team in the early days before even the games of spring training is really, really positive. And if there's an article that I really think, it's really not even an article, it's a Q&A. Steve Serby does these at the New York Post, and it is a Post Plus, so I don't know if you're a member, but you'd have to subscribe. I think it's about $5 a month. But he has a one-on-one sit-down with Mendoza. And, you know, he talks about the fearlessness of Soto. He talks about the hunger in the team, about the group of guys that is here, and a big chunk of them are coming back, about their desire to win a championship, the kind of gamers he has on this club. And, you know, the excitement he has really where they don't want to just own New York and have this marketing moniker of, you know, being better than the Yankees. They want to win a World Series. They want to be the best of the best. And they've got some guys on this team, not with Soto coming in. And you saw some of that low-key assassin in Soto in just his first press conference today. But Avientos, a guy who I think it's going to be really interesting how he handles his sophomore year in the big leagues and the chip on his shoulder that is described. And how does Alonso now, where maybe he doesn't have to be the man, or he went through the gauntlet with free agency. You know, how does he fit into this lineup? You know, can Brandon Nimmo just do what he does now and, you know, be that run creator? And then, of course, the closer in Diaz. Can Diaz bounce back? I mean, there's so many guys around this team that have been through the hell and back in this market, in this town. and, you know, Lindor and how he's endured. And I could go on and on and on. And there's certainly veterans that have to prove themselves, but this is a group that has proven they're tough, that has proven that they can handle adversity. Some of them have handled adversity over and over, like a Diaz. Some of them have been humbled, like a Alonso. Some of them have massive expectations on them, like a Soto. And, you know, really when you hear Mendoza talk, there's a certain level of, first of all, there's no BS in him. And there's a certain level of balance and matter-of-factness and honesty you hear in his voice where, you know, he's just, he's direct. I mean, and I think if you read this piece from Serbi at the Post, you'll see that. There's no, you know, mincing words or trying to sound smarter than you are, something that sometimes Mickey Callie would do, or maybe some of the arm's-length answers that a Louis Rojas would give. Buck was great. We all know Buck. Buck was also, he would use comedy and relationships and folksiness to kind of disarm the media. But I think Buck was old school in the Belichick, Parcells, Riley mindset of where he didn't really want to give away too much. So he kind of deflected a little bit. I think Mendoza is able to keep state secrets, have a good casual conversation. And, you know, so far he's been able to keep a group of men together, focused and pushing them towards a common goal. And the pressure is on. Make no mistake about it. I mean, right away you're seeing some of the media narratives come into play here, as you're hearing a lot of pundits that are trying to find executives around the game talk about how Soto's overpaid and that the Yankees had a better off season where they spread the money around. And you know that there's a large contingent of national writers here, particularly, and you know who they are, and maybe even local beat writers, that can't wait for the Mets to fail. Because in their mind, the Mets are media gold when they're a failure. And in a lot of ways in the media landscape, and this goes back pre-social media, a bad, dysfunctional team is always a better story than a well-oiled dynasty, in some ways. Now, dynasty is always a good story, but a team that just goes out there and competes and wins and is successful and has functionality and no drama, that's boring. And you have a lot of that right now with Stearns and Cohen. They have stabilized the ship. They have come through. Cohen himself, as an owner, has come through the gauntlet here. And that's boring for the media. So you know that they're looking for the Soto 185 start, the fans booing. They're looking for, you know, the Mets lineup not to click, or the pitching to be a disaster, or Diaz to be, you know, the May of last year Diaz, so to speak, to start to see the volume and the anger of the fans amp up and see the Mets, anytime there's expectations, just like 2023, see that they can't handle it. I think that yoke of expectations is not as heavy of an anvil as it has been in the past. I think they broke through that last year. We'll see. That thing can come and rear itself. Like I said, it's almost like a vampire. You know, until you drive that stake through its heart, it's always in the arena. It's always around. And maybe until you win a championship, you won't drive the stake through the heart. But I don't know if this group of guys, after what they've been through last year and the success they had in October, and that's, let me tell you, that's addicting. You know it as a fan. When you have that success in the postseason and those celebrations and those wild moments, whether it be Alonso's home run in Milwaukee, the double play that Peterson induced to end the game, the way that Schwarber was struck out by Diaz against the Phillies, and some of the big moments against the Dodgers, it's an addicting thing. You want more and more of it. But the thing is, you got to work to get there, and the work starts now. The work starts in Port St. Lucie. And it's not something that you could just say, well, we're the 2024 Mets that are now the 2025 Mets. We're the OMG Mets. We have magic. You know, things are just going to happen. No, the magic happened because this group worked. Because this group was, whatever their role was, they went in and they were the best version of what they could be within that role. And I think that's where Mendoza has a couple of different things that come into play here. I don't think complacency will be an issue, because how can you be complacent when you didn't win the whole damn thing? But when teams have success, sometimes they get a little bit big-headed and flat and lazy. And that's one. And then the burden of expectations and big expectations, particularly with the guy that got the $760 million contract. I mean, just listening to him talk, the guy doesn't seem to get fazed by a lot. I mean, he's supremely confident. You don't become the kind of hitter that he is, a top 10 hitter in the history of the game, by lacking confidence or having, you know, voices in your head. Now, maybe there's something to be said, you know, growing up in a less than desirable economic situation and making it here in the U.S. You know, sometimes when you see that hellscape that reality could be, baseball doesn't become this big of a deal. Maybe that's part of it. I'm speculating, of course, but, you know, who knows? But, you know, hearing even Soto talk about becoming a better base runner and defender, these are things that, as a guy that's being paid the way he is, these are challenges. We'll see if he could do it. So there's a lot of good that, you know, this team can provide, but it's going to happen with the work. And we're going to take a quick break, and when we come back, we'll get into maybe some of the positional battles that are out there, things that I'll be looking at, some players that I'll be looking at to see, even if they don't make the 26-man roster. Honestly, to be straight, and you guys who've been following me over at Beyond the Mic, the subscription service, already have got a taste of it, there's not all that many positional battles on this club if there is health. That's the big if. So let's take a quick break. When we come back, I'm going to get a little bit over the roster, look at the offense, look at the positional battles on there, look at the bench, look at the starting rotation and the bullpen. We'll get into that. And I'm going to give you players that I want you to watch, because I'm going to be watching them this spring as we start the grind towards the regular season and then what we all affectionately know here at the Talking Mets podcast, the getting to know you phase, getting to know the 2025 Mets, who are very similar to the 2024 Mets, but let's see, because as Mendoza said, 2024 is in the rearview mirror. It is now 2025. New challenges, new faces, new situations, new nemesises, new rivalries. Everything's new, and there is a lot in front of us. All right, we'll be back with more right after this.
Carlos, how do you plan to divvy up Brett Beatty's defensive innings this spring? Are you going to just play him first, second, third, outfield? Or
no. Out of the gate, we'll see him a lot at third, and we'll see him a lot at second base. We're going to keep it at those two, see how everything unfolds. Maybe we'll see him take some ground balls at shortstop. I'm not saying he'll play a game, or maybe if we get to that point, but first base not so much. Maybe just backfield work and things like that. But as far as game action goes, it'll be third base. It'll be second base.
Will he take any fly balls? Just, you know, not necessarily.
Maybe on like a BP and something like that. But
no real plan.
No. Him out there. No. For now, we'll keep him at third and second.
All right, we're back. So now that I got you all pepped up, 2024 is in the rearview mirror. It's 2025. You know, really kind of get that foundation, that psychological aspect of the season, the importance of the season. Now proving it on the field. They leveraged it in the offseason. They leveraged it in the hot stove. Now they've got to prove it on the field. Let's take a look at how spring training is going to go, because always in spring training, you like to talk about positional battles and, you know, who could win this role on the team, and how is the starting rotation going to go? Is there, you know, battle for the fifth spot, the bullpen, who's 6, 7, and 8 usually on a good team? There might be one or two spots that are up for grabs. This Mets team doesn't have, and that's the thing I think, and a lot of times when we talk about guys making the roster, we forget the biggest thing that you have to factor when you are building the team out of spring training are options. Options are gold for a team. They stink for a player. Mark Vientos is a perfect example. Mark Vientos had options last year. The Mets went out and got J.D. Martinez. They had an opportunity to keep Zach Short and look at Zach Short for a little bit. Joey Wendell, there were some veterans. They weren't sure what they had there. They weren't sure what they had with Vientos. So he got sent down, and he had another option where he could get sent down. He no longer has options. That doesn't matter. He's making the club. But the point is, he had that one last option, and the Mets were going to use that, and it allowed them to almost in a way look at some players in the first month or so of the season. It's an extended tryout in a lot of ways when games count. And you don't want to do that with critical parts of the team. But the one thing that we've learned, the modern GM, and Stearns falls into this, and maybe it's a fantasy baseball aspect to their repertoire, they're okay with a roster being fluid. Back in the day, a lot of times you wanted to build your roster in the offseason. You had some positional battles during the spring. But once you hit opening day, and you had your, at the time, it was a 25-man roster, yeah, you would have some fluidity with injuries and maybe a kid that needed more seasoning. Sometimes somebody would be brought up to provide a spark when the team needed it. But you didn't have the fluidity. It wasn't like you were going to overturn your bullpen a complete 180. And the Mets really did that last year like they do today. I mean, it's really like a fantasy baseball aspect. It's like, okay, this isn't working. Or, you know, as you get later in the year, you start to build your postseason roster because there's some needs, whether you bring in a Terrence Gore type to be a runner. You know, things like that. That's kind of what I mean by the fluidity of the roster. But, you know, this Mets team has not only not a lot of positions open, they don't have a lot of guys with options. If you want to talk about guys who have options on the offensive side, we'll start there. Nick Madrigal, who they just signed, has an option. I know that's controversial because there's talk with the Mets still trying to sign Jose Iglesias. And I know Boris went to his favorite writer and had Iglesias do a sit down and almost like a final plea to the Mets, like, hey, I got offers out there. I really want to sign with you. Please make me an offer. So we'll see where that goes. But he's not a reality, Iglesias. I'd love to see him come back. Madrigal is on the roster. So he's got an option. Francisco Alvarez has an option. Believe it or not, Kodai Senga has options. I doubt they're going to use that. David Peterson has an option. Reed Garrett has an option. So he could get sent down at some point. And then if you go down to the rest of the rotation, Tyler McGill has an option. Daniel Nunez has an option. Oscar Brazenbone has an option. Tyler Zuber, who they acquired from Tampa last year at the deadline, he has an option. And, you know, one of the guys, one of the trasher treasures, one of the scrap heap pickups, Austin Warren, an arm from the Giants, he has an option as well. So the Mets have some guys with options, but not many. So when you look at the positional situation, it's pretty much set. You have your starting lineup. You have Lindor, Soto, Alonso, Nimmo, Vientos, Winker / Marte, Alvarez and Torrens behind the plate, McNeil at second, Siri and Tyrone Taylor in the outfield and center. And really at this point, you have one spot, that backup infield spot, which Madrigal is, you know, part of, Acuna is part of. You heard Mendoza talking about Beatty getting some reps at second. You know, short, I kind of chuckled. You know, maybe they could see, can he be an emergency shortstop? That'd be interesting if he was such a clunker at third his rookie year. That's really it. I mean, it's going to come down to, and Madrigal has options. And I think it'll be, assuming again that Iglesias, who I still feel there might be, if they could find some kind of, similar to Alonso, reasonable contract, I don't think Iglesias is completely out of the question. Not only because he is perfect for this team in terms of he could complement McNeil because he hits left-handers really well. He's not an everyday shortstop, but he's a veteran who's played short and played short at a high level. So if Lindor needs a blow, I think he could do a good enough job there. I know defensively he's probably not as good as Acuna. I don't think Madrigal's really a shortstop. I've read about him. He's more of a third baseman, second baseman, and he's a good fielder. I mean, he's won a gold glove in the minor leagues. But the bat isn't there. He's a contact guy. He's a top pick contact guy. So, you know, but the fact that Madrigal has options, unless Acuna really lights it up this spring, you got to think he's got the inside track. Look, they had Zach Short make the team last year. They had Joey Wendell make the team. Madrigal profile is very similar to those guys, so there's a little bit of a history there. So that's one of your battles. You're Acuna, Madrigal, Beatty, who really, because I don't think the shortstop situation, I don't think he's a viable option at short. So Beatty's probably ticketed for AAA. You know, those guys are you know, that's your one positional battle. That's it. Again, you're assuming healthy. You're assuming that the catching situation is fine. There's no injuries, no broken bones. You know, Nimmo with his plantar fasciitis, who's at 91%, is okay. That, you know, McNeil hasn't have a relapse of injury. Lindor, God forbid, is back, whatever. You know, all that stuff that you can't predict right now. So that's it. That's your battle. Of course, hanging over these guys until he signs with another club is Iglesias. But again, that's not reality. Now, you move to the starting rotation. It's also pretty much set. I mean, we talk about, well, who's going to... And a couple of things here. Who's going to be the fifth starter? In this case, it looks like the Mets are going to go six starters. I wrote about it over at Beyond the Mic. It'll be interesting because last year the Mets got about 32 starts from seven different starters. And you need about 12 pitchers to get through the season. The fact that the Mets have seven, if you count McGill, you're already seven deep on the starting situation. You're in a pretty good spot at this point. And mind you, one of the starters that were part of those seven that gave 32 starts was Kodai Senga, who only gave them one. Now, assuming, again, health, because he had the spinal injury, I don't see how a Paul Blackburn, who they gave up Cade Morris for, not a top five prospect, but a decent arm, and had competitive starts when he came over from Oakland in August, when the Mets were fighting to stick around the wild card until he got hurt, and then they handed it over to McGill. You know, Blackburn had competitive starts. I don't see how, even with a lights-out spring training, McGill is able to push himself in the conversation. Again, I'm assuming Senga's ready to go. Montas is ready to go. There's no issues with Holmes and ramping him up from a reliever to a starter where he wouldn't need some kind of like extended spring training. I doubt that's the case. Sounds like quite the contrary. He's ahead. So in a lot of ways, McGill is this year's version of Vientos, where it really doesn't matter what he does in this spring. He's probably ticketed for AAA because you need that depth. And McGill is going to provide that depth at AAA. And the reason is he's got options. Now, McGill didn't have options, and you had six of these guys. Peterson, and maybe Peterson, who has an option and has a horrible spring. I mean, maybe they look at something, but I just can't see that. I think Peterson has established himself at this point. He really has. Does Senga need extended spring to ramp up? Let's hope not. That's a bad sign. So, again, really, there's no starter debate. And yeah, you can get excited about Sproat all you want. He's not breaking camp with the Mets. He didn't have an impressive stint at AAA. Yeah, he had a great, you know, three innings throwing batting practice the other day. He's always going to get hype. He's a top prospect. He is the Mets' top prospect right now. Let's see him get some outs at AAA before, you know, anything. Now, I didn't put Griffin Canning, who they signed from Anaheim, into the equation because it sounds like he's going to be coming out of the bullpen, and the Mets like his repertoire out of the bullpen. Now, he and Buto, and that was the interesting part, Buto wasn't even considered. I knew Buto, who didn't have options, was going to be part of the mix of making the roster. They're not going to want to lose him. But the fact that they didn't even include Buto to even try could mean that they know that there's no room for him because of Blackburn. They also saw him relieve. Mendoza intimated that he got a little bit burnt out at the end of the year, so maybe they need to figure that out. I mean, Buto to me is so similar to Seth Lugo, and I wouldn't be surprised if Buto goes in the same career path where he spends a couple of years in the bullpen and then finally says, hey, you know, the way he's going to make money is in the rotation. That's how you're going to make money. You can make money out of the bullpen, but look at Lugo. He almost wins a Cy Young, finally goes into the rotation in Kansas City. And he has that similar type of trajectory. And, you know, right now it's just a matter of opportunity. You can always go back and build yourself up. Look at Clay Holmes. He was a closer for the Yankees. He's building himself back up into the bullpen. So I was a little surprised he didn't even get a shot, but it looks like he's ticketed for the bullpen. But when you look at the bullpen, you've got Diaz. You assume that maybe Minter needs a little bit of extended spring to get recover from his hip injury, but he's going to be in there. Reed Garrett has options, but he might be, you know, and I wrote about this over at the Beyond the Mic. He might be a guy with his repertoire, with his stuff, if you go look at Stuff Plus over at Fangraphs, he might be a guy that's up for a breakout candidate. Now, I criticized him a lot last year because I said when the bright lights got too bright, he kind of choked. A lot of his issues is getting ahead of the count because when he gets behind and he has to throw that fastball, he gets clocked. I know he had some injuries midseason. Maybe some of that was the excessive use early in the year. But Reed Garrett's definitely a guy to watch. He'll be in that bullpen. Ryan Stanek is back. I mentioned Buto. Griffin Canning, they signed him. They gave him, what, $4 million bucks. He's not going anywhere. He has no options. Unless he stinks out the joint, maybe they'll release him, i.e. Adrian Hauser last year. But that's going to be a while. You're going to get some rope to hang yourself. You're going to get at least, you know, 8 to 10 weeks before they start pulling the plug on you here. Remember, it's the getting to know you phase. The Mets aren't going to panic in April and May. Now, here's where there might be some pain with your final spot. So you got Diaz, Minter, Buto, Garrett is four, Stanek is five, Griffin is six. What? 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7. Now here's where it gets interesting, because you're going to be able to do 8 in the bullpen. So you got Diaz, Minter, Buto 3, Reed Garrett 4, Stanek 5, Griffin Canning 6. Now you have 2 spots left. But in reality, you don't have 2 spots because you're going with 6 starters. So you're only going to have 7 bullpen arms. So now Danny Young, a lefty, and again, I'm saying that Minter's breaking camp with the club and is healthy. Danny Young, a lefty, in the old days, I sound like an old fart, I always say that, when you could do loogies and such like that, you would love to have a second lefty because you would really need one, and you'd need that guy, and Young would be that loogie. The problem is that there's the 3-batter rule now. So Danny Young now is competing, and it's a pretty... and this might be the most interesting positional battle camp, and it might be, and it will be. I don't think it might. It will be the most difficult decision because you have Danny Young competing for that spot, Sean Reed Foley, Daniel Nunez, who I think has the upper hand to start. He was very impressive. That was a big blow to that bullpen when he went down late. Huascar Brazenban, who has good stuff. Very inconsistent. Another guy that didn't throw strikes all the time when they acquired him from Miami at the deadline. Tyler Zuber, a guy with some stuff that they acquired from Tampa and never got a shot last year. And then you have the Kevin Hergerts, the Max Kranichs, who was actually, I think he was on the postseason roster, just didn't get any time. And Austin Warren. Now, everybody that I mentioned except for Sean Reed Foley and Danny Young has options. So off the bat, in theory, you would say that gives Reed Foley and Danny Young the advantage. Now, Nunez, I think he's going to be one of those guys because he had the ulnar injury. And they say that he doesn't need Tommy John. They say he's healthy. He might be a guy that just goes down to AAA because he's got options, even though he deserves to make the club. I don't know if he'll be Tyler McGill in the sense where he, you know, makes his... you know, he's going to be that guy that no matter what, he's going to get sent down similar to Vientos. But I don't know if I would say he has to be on the roster day one. Because Brazenban, same situation, very likely. Actually, both of them have a couple of options, so they could go down again next year. I think both those guys are going to be first man up. I think the fact they have options puts them in a situation where it's easy to send them down to AAA. Stearns has talked about a fungible bullpen. It doesn't have to be perfect day one. And I think the one that's really, and both Danny Young, who has good stuff and he got some big outs, but he's wildly inconsistent and he makes me so nervous, so jittery on the mound. And Sean Reed Foley. Now, Sean Reed Foley went down late. A guy that, you know, had a great year last year in 23 games, 1.66 ERA. Walk rate is kind of high, can't stay healthy, but a good pitcher. And I suspect that if you expose him to waivers by sending him down, he's probably going to get picked up at the end of spring training. I don't think he goes back down to AAA. And because he doesn't have options, if you bring him back up, you're going to go through that shenanigans every time. So I really think, you know, my gut tells me the options are going to put Nunez and Brazenban, even if they have good springs down the minor leagues, I think the Mets are going to have to make a decision between Reed Foley and Young. Now, that is assuming performance. Now, if Reed Foley walks the ballpark, looks bad, and doesn't seem to be healthy, and Danny Young is the jittery, walk the ballpark version he was, then it's an easy decision. You take one of the kids, Brazenban or Nunez, and away you go. So, you know, that's, it's as simple as that. You know, and the thing is this, you're going to need, and I suspect, even, not that there's going to be phantom DL, IL, I shouldn't say DL, there's going to be guys that are going to need some blows. You're going to maybe have guys spend 10, 15 days injured, so all these guys are going to get a shot at some point. You know, I could see a Blackburn or a Senga needed to be skipped a couple of times, so they put him on the injured list. McGill comes up, makes a couple of starts, maybe Sproat gets a chance. You know, we'll see how things go. Maybe even Clay Holmes is going to need to take a blow because of his innings. The Mets are blessed now, a combination, and it might be even better depth than you think, combination of, you know, depth on the big league roster, some interesting guys in the minor leagues, and in a case here, and for the first time in a long time, they have too many options. Like, normally, a guy like Brazenbaum and Nunez, they would be no-brainers for a Mets bullpen. Now, they're on the outside looking in, mainly because of options. Now, Stanek stinks and looks like he's done. The Mets will probably just walk away from him midseason, and they could bring one of these kids up. Griffin Canning stinks and is not who they think he is. They'll walk away. Yeah, it'll cost them some money, but they're willing to walk away, and then maybe this bullpen is completely different. With what you see now, you may not have to go out and spend prospect capital to get your Phil Maton and Ryan Stanek versions of 2025 at the deadline, because you have them all here. You may be able to pull back. You may have, you know, you may have the conversation about, hey, do I import an ace? Does you know, the Dylan Cease conversation, does that come back up? Or a pitcher of that top of the rotation ilk, does that come up? I mean, the Mets are and they really are in a much, much different situation because they've done a really good job this offseason. So you look at this roster, it's not just about performing in the spring. You could perform like Babe Ruth or Cy Young this spring. But if you have options, you may not be making the team because it's an evolving organism, the roster. So, you know, that's just something to keep an eye on, something to think about. And quite honestly, it's a reality. And I think that that's the part as you evaluate and as you look at what's going on, that's the part to keep in mind. Nunez is pitching great. They don't need to have him opening day. But what do they have in Sean Reed Foley? Performance usually is the equalizer here, the great equalizer. If Reed Foley, Danny Young stink, it doesn't matter about the options. But if all these guys are good, I think the guy with the options gets sent down. The guy without it is going to stay up. So, all right, we're going to take one last quick break. When we come back, we're going to wrap up. I'm going to give you some names to watch this spring. Not the obvious ones, but there's some names to watch. We'll wrap up with that right after this. All right, we're back. Final thoughts. So who am I going to be watching this spring? Who are some of the interesting guys? Look, we know that spring is going to be for guys like Soto and Alonso to just get themselves into shape. I'm not going to get crazy with the numbers. They could win the batting title in the Grapefruit League. They could win the Cy Young Award, Manaea, and Singh in the Grapefruit League. It doesn't matter. None of that matters. In a lot of ways, none of the stats matter because they're going to be working on stuff. Obviously, we talked about positional battles, but I'm going to be looking at the process, not the numbers for certain guys. And the first really fascinating, and quite honestly, one of the most important things I'm looking for this spring, on the positional side particularly, starting there, and then on the pitching side is, I'll start on the positional side, is the kids. And I'll put Alvarez in there. Alvarez, Acuna, Beatty. Now, I saw online somebody compare how can Beatty maybe be like Chase Utley playing second base. That was extremely interesting comparison. You know, can Beatty be a guy that evolves at second base, can play the position competently, turn a double play? I think that's going to be the biggest question. And hit 15 to 20 home runs, hit 260, have a high on-base percentage. Maybe eventually he evolves and he becomes sort of like McNeil. I don't think he could have the versatility of McNeil playing the outfield. I think that's where McNeil has a lot of value. McNeil could play center field. McNeil could play the corners and play him well. But maybe he evolves into that. So I'm going to watch Beatty a lot to see how's that bat. Is he hitting those line drives that you see in AAA, that hard hit you see in AAA? Is he finally going to see it in the big leagues? I don't know if you're going to get a good feel in spring training of any of that, but it's something to watch. Obviously, Acuna, you saw the one good week. He did not hit much at AAA. He didn't really get a chance in the postseason. He was a backup player, but he didn't do much in the postseason. I think that Acuna could be a very valuable piece. In a lot of ways, it was between him and Madrigal. The fact that Acuna could play center, short, second, maybe third, and from what I hear, play center really well. That kind of versatility is huge in an environment where you really don't have a lot of bench. You have your 9 starters with the DH and 4 guys, one of which is a catcher. So you really have 3 bench guys. So versatility is critical. Acuna could play short. You saw how big it was for him to come in when Lindor went down late in the year. So I think he has a great shot. It'll be interesting because Madrigal has the options, but I'm going to be watching Acuna. Even if he gets sent down for some seasoning, he could be a big part of 2025, especially if Iglesias doesn't return. The real big positional kid, and he's not really a kid. He's been up a couple of years now, but he can lengthen the Mets lineup in a way that makes it, I don't want to start saying they're as good as the Dodgers or Dodgers-esque, because that's unfair. They have to prove themselves, you know, especially, like, Soto alone makes it better, but Francisco Alvarez, who's talking a good talk about becoming more patient, and in the past, when he's worked on his game, like he did with the framing and behind the plate, when he got the reputation coming up as a bad defensive player, he worked and worked and worked at it, and he's had a future Hall of Famer praising him in Max Scherzer. And he's been nothing but really good with the framing, got a strong arm, doesn't necessarily throw out the level of base runners you would want, but a lot of that has to do with the pickoff rule. I'm not going to blame him. Most of the stolen bases now are because of that, not necessarily the catcher, but he's got a strong enough arm where, you know, he can throw guys out. He's not Torres. Torres is a really good and an accurate arm. So maybe that's something to work on. But now Alvarez needs to put that work and those results to becoming a better hitter. Because the guy that I saw last year was lost to the forest. He was either swinging from his heels, impatient. He had a nice stretch from like middle of June when he got back till maybe early July, right before the All-Star break. But he was in the doldrums the entire back half of the year. Had a couple of big hits against the Phillies and Dodgers. So I'm not going to totally say he had a bad postseason. But he was leaving a ton of runners on. He was a net negative at the plate most of the postseason. I need to see the approach. Not the numbers, the approach. Is he going to take the ball the other way? Think about how he hit in Game 5 at Citi Field against the Dodgers. He had a great game that Friday night. Can you see that approach from him more consistently? Because he'll put himself into hitters' counts, and then that massive power will become a real asset. We didn't even see the power. And I don't think it's because he doesn't he lost his power. I mean, look, he had a moonshot against the Orioles to win a game late in the year. It's because he didn't put himself in enough hitters counts, and I think a lot of times he was flailing a lot. So those are the three offensive players I'm really going to be watching. Now, on the pitching side, I mentioned that you need about 12 starters. You got 7 so far when you put Tylor Megill, but really, the depth of the Mets pitchers is going to come down to, in part, some of the kids, Hamill, Tidwell, obviously Sproat. How do they look? How close are they? Can the Mets rely on them to start the second game of a doubleheader, to sub in for 2 weeks if there's an injury? We know they're going to have some innings limitations, so I don't think they're going to be a big part of the rotation, but maybe if there's underperformance or Clay Holmes needs to go to the bullpen late in the year because he's not working out or injury, can they step in and give them, you know, a jolt? That'll be something interesting that we're going to be looking at. There's another name, Brandon Waddell, who they got from the KBO, lefty, has options, been up and down, really nothing special throughout his career. But the interesting thing is, the Mets, you know, brought him over, just like Jared Young, they brought him over from the KBO. Is there something there? I'll be watching him a little bit, just like I'll be watching Jared Young. Jared Young, I've talked about Max Muncy and how the Dodgers got Max Muncy out of nowhere. There's this lefty bat that, in some cases, I saw some of the guys over at Baseball Prospectus saying he's a better first baseman than Alonso. I was like, okay, I'm not ready for that, to say that. Can Jared Young and that lefty bat force them to, he's going to get sent down, he has options, but can he force them to think a little bit, about putting him on the roster? He's able to play a couple of corner positions. I think he might even be able to play the outfield. So, he could play corner, first, second, corner, outfield, third base. Yeah, that's a lot of value. I mean, he's been a 4A player his career, but he's got pop, he's lefty. That'll be interesting to see. So I'll be watching him as well. Of course, you also have the Tylor Megills. Like I said, the Brazenbonds. Has he come and improved a bit? Sean Reed Foley, Danny Young. I think like I said earlier, that early year bullpen, you know, it's going to evolve. I'd be curious how they handle that, especially if they have all these guys that pitch well and they have guys who are out of options. I think it'll be really interesting. It'd be a great problem to have, right? That they have these great arms down in AAA and Nunez and Brazenbond. They can't crack the roster. I don't know. Danny Young, to me, I'd be curious how they view him And it also go, can they sneak these guys through waivers if they send them down? I mean, that's also part of it. I think if there's one last thing I've been talking a lot about, and it forced the Mets to get Torrens late in the year. If there are injuries at the catching position, the Mets haven't really had any homegrown depth that's ready. This offseason, they went out and got a couple of scrap heap guys, Jackson Reitz, Chris Williams. They have Hayden Senger and Matt O'Neill in their own organization. Maybe some of those guys will become something. I know Kevin Parada is still around, but I don't think he's anywhere near ready. Everybody else down the line, they're nowhere near ready. So that's another smaller thing, looking at exactly what kind of catching depth they have. So a lot to talk about this spring. You know, what's the plan? The plan is to continue to do our weekly show. I would like to maybe do some kind of, you know, round table or some kind of conversation with the writers or some other independent minds to see, you know, their thoughts about the spring. So stay tuned for that. But the purpose of this show is just to kick off the spring, kick off the mindset, kick off the theme, which is leveraging now on the field, the feel good vibes of 24, critically important year in Mets history. You don't want to take a step back. It would be disastrous for the organization after the offseason they had, disastrous after the great run they had. It would probably create more chaos and questions than answers. Now, I'm not saying they have to win the World Series, and I'm not even saying, you know, you win 95 games and don't make the playoffs in a tough division, and you're going to be in a tough division. You have the Phillies, you have the Braves, you have the Mets. You know, I don't think Washington will continue to be a slouch. I think they're getting better. I know Miami doesn't spend money, but, you know, they've always had some decent pitching that they could employ and put you to sleep down at that ballpark. So they got enough problems there. Obviously, the Dodgers are in their way in the National League. Are the Cubs better? You know, we'll see. Milwaukee, it'll be interesting. I think the best teams in the league outside of the Dodgers, putting the Dodgers aside, are in the National League East, so the Mets have their work cut out for them. They're going to be in a dogfight, and they're going to be facing their the teams in their division more often, even though not as much as they used to back in the past. And that sometimes cannibalizes some of the record and allows teams that are less deserving to be in the mix late in the year and sometimes sneak in. So we'll see. So anyway, that's it. That's all I have for you on this Sunday. I want to thank everybody for tuning in as we kick off spring training here, the Grapefruit League, with our annual Pitchers and Catchers Talking Mets State of the Union. You can check me out all the time at thetalkingmetspodcast.com. You get me on X at Talking Mets, no G, and on your favorite podcasting service, Apple, Spotify, pretty much whatever podcasting service you desire. If you want to interact with me, Mike Silva at talkingmetspodcast.com, no G. Mike Silva at TalkingMetsPodcast.com. You get me on Instagram, TalkingMetsNoG. And I'd love for you to subscribe to the newsletter, Substack.com/@TalkingMetsNoG. And I want to thank the good folks on Fansided Podcasting Network for supporting this show. I'm your host, Mike Silva. Enjoy the rest of your Sunday. We'll be back with another Talking Mets podcast next week. Till then, take care, everybody.